thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Yep, yep, yep.
Here's John Williams.
All in a day's work. Hi, it's John. That doesn't even include the dancing part. It's 108. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, and I so appreciate you tuning in. I know we all do here. Listen to us on Saturdays as well. We're on Saturday mornings after Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It. He can dance up a storm. He goes till 10 a.m. starting at 7, and then I come on from 10 a.m. until noon. Lou Manfredini popped into my studio today and began offering advice that was unsolicited about how to better ballroom dance. Lou Manfredini, if you've ever seen him in person, is the size of a small village. His head is not that different from that of a Volvo. He's just a man with large appendages and parts. He does not look graceful. I said, Lou, who are you to tell me how to dance? I'll be in a celebrity dance competition that Lou was in previously. It's put on by the very good folks at Arthur Murray, and it will benefit breast cancer research. It's a Chicago area Dancing with the Stars celebrity hoo-ha. So they get people like me in a weak moment to say, sure, I'll do your dance thing. Lou had done it previously, and I was happy to dismiss any advice Lou would give me because Lou's large, and he couldn't be graceful. Then we went to YouTube and saw a video that his producer, Lindsay, had posted of Lou dancing in the competition a couple of years ago. Lou is terrific.
Nimble?
Oh, my gosh.
Very light on his toes.
Totally. How can somebody built like that be that much better than somebody built like me? So I did more practicing last night. My wife just now looks away. She knows that laughing doesn't help, and saying things like be lighter doesn't help.
So wait, are you at home practicing by yourself?
Yeah.
But you're doing a duet dance, right?
Well, the woman that I'm dancing with, Danny, she doesn't live with us, no. Although that might not be a bad idea, at least for a while. The video of me dancing is on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. And props to Lou Manfredini. If you have a computer, go to the YouTube, type in Lou Manfredini dancing, stars, just do some search words. You'll see some videos of him practicing, but there'll be no mistaking him doing the quick step at an event at a ballroom, at a gala. And there he is with a fancy tie on and a lady who knows what she's doing. And dang, he goes, ta 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 ta, he did ta, ta 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 ta, pa pa pa. Oh, man, Lou can dance. Elif, feeling for me, my producer, said in the corner of the office, well, John, and I knew this wasn't going to go well. Although her intention was good, but she said, it's not important that you rate yourself against Lou. It's best that you just do the best job you can.
John?
Yeah?
You can't let Lou beat you.
That's what I'm thinking. Lou is a hardware store owner. He's a fix-it man. He almost always has a wrench on him. I cut a svelter figure. He's younger than me, but he can't be a better dancer than me.
Well, it sounds like he is right now.
He totally is.
Right.
And you know what? And I'm watching this, and I just started barking out, I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do any of these things Lou is doing. And then he's sitting there over my shoulder going, well, what you need, you can't fix this, Mr. Fix-It. It's done. Because that's Lou's instinct. If you have marital problems or problems with your plumbing, and actually, those may be the same thing. Lou is happy to help you fix those. Lou is a genuinely helpful person.
So, when is this competition?
It's too soon. It's in March.
Okay. And
I'll look up the date.
So, if we wanted to bet against you, we could bring Lou in there, sit beside him.
March 16th.
He would totally get in your head. Is there any book action on this?
Well, Sam Panionovich is leaving for a bookie job on Sirius, where he'll do a radio show on the satellite about booking. And we'll see if they don't lay odds. But I don't think I'll score as many points as Lou did, unless there's some sort of charity sympathy vote out there.
The charities win, John. The charities win.
Yeah, Lou's good at that, too.
No matter how badly you dance.
Dance. By the way, a couple of you have already donated to the charity that I'm supporting. And at the end of the day, I mean, really, what am I doing here? I'm giving. I'm giving and giving and giving. And the only reason I'm doing this is so that we can help fight breast cancer. I'm humiliating myself, not only in front of a ballroom audience of about 700, but in front of Lou Manfredini, and that's going to be there forever. If you donate, that's all I ask. On my Facebook page, I'm King John, and on the video where you see me dancing, you can click through and make a donation. Some of you have already. Thank you.
But if not, get a whole table and come watch this unfold.
And explain what you mean by the word unfold.
I just mean, will he crack under pressure?
What does unfold mean?
I kind of imagine you running off stage, being like, this is not how we rehearsed it. I messed it up. I need to start over.
Do a whole, who was it? Jessica Simpson's sister, right? On Saturday Night Live one night.
When she did the lip singing.
And she got mad and just kind of walked off. And they're like, oh, won't, won't. No, that won't happen. But will I forget where to dance and completely botch it? Sure.
Nobody knows that you messed up. That's the key about performance. You have to keep going.
Here's my question for today. If somebody on Twitter fudges the number of followers they have, is that a sufficient red flag for you to now worry about the veracity of what they're reporting? If I have fake followers, does it mean that I might do fake news? I don't know the answer to this question, but this is not a new phenomenon. And if you just do a Google search of that, you'll find all sorts of instances where people have been busted for having hundreds of thousands of followers, and lo and behold, a lot of them aren't real. When Katy Perry was announced to be the number one person on Twitter, and for a while she held the crown for most followers, she had about 90 million of them. An audit was done, and 60 million of them were found to be fraudulent. 60 million fake followers. Richard Roper of the Chicago Sun-Times, the film critic and soon-to-be twice-a-week columnist, returning to his old post, has 225,000. He's a 250,000 followers. It's down a little bit, then it goes up a little bit. But sometimes it's gone up like 25,000. At one point, he lost about 20,000, and then suddenly, bink, it went up a comfortable 25,000. How did that happen? Well, it may be that he went online and purchased it for pennies on the follower. For a couple hundred bucks, you can get for $2,000. And if you're a high-profile media person, or even me, $2,000 might be a reasonable investment in your career. For $2,000, right now, I could get 300,000 Twitter followers, or at least that number would say 300,000. Not all of them would be real. A lot of them would be bots, accounts that would just follow me and retweet something if I wanted to. But those retweets would essentially be blank shots because nobody follows those bots. They're fake accounts. So though it would look like I have a lot of retweeters or followers, in fact, I don't.
But now, it might help you get more followers if you do it.
Absolutely.
Because you would look more attractive.
I totally agree with that. I think the equity in that. Listen, I'll just say this about Richard Roper. I don't know him that well. I've worked in this town for 20 years and I've bumped into a few times. I've interviewed him a few times. He's very close to several members of the staff here, including Ro Khan. He's substitute hosts here. I've been a fan of Richard Roper's forever. I thought as a TV critic of movies, he was terrific. And when he's written columns, I thought he was as good as this town has. Richard Roper fan. Too bad for him that now people will question the truthfulness. Maybe they won't, but I mean, why is the Sun-Times pulling back? Why is the Sun-Times sidelining him right now?
I don't think the question is if he's trustworthy anymore. I think the question is, you were an influencer because you have this many followers, and perhaps you don't have the same impact that the Sun-Times thinks you had if half of them are fake.
Right.
So that begs the question, is the Sun-Times paying him for his Twitter followers or for what he produces for them to put into their newspaper?
What's your answer to that question?
Well, presumably, unless he's being hired and paid on the basis of his social media following, the Sun-Times doesn't own his social media account. It's his private account.
No, but it's almost like a resume. If that was one of the top three things that made your employer think you were attractive.
If that's the case. Now, I'm hoping that they prefer his use of punctuation and the way he gets his points across when he writes.
How is that not the case, Steve?
What do you mean?
Of course that matters. Of course that. If Richard Roper...
You're doing it again. You get me to argue on these unpopular positions. Go ahead.
Take your own stand. Listen, I usually lose these things if it's any consolation.
That's why I do it.
And I'm going to argue that Richard Roper's compromised his integrity in this town, and it's not fair because even the compromise is fake. I still think he's an honest, trustworthy person. But now it looks bad, and I think sometimes appearance is as important as reality.
I think in a way the whole social media following thing is like a Bitcoin. Where there's several different definitions or meanings for it. You know, can you get your word out because you've got more followers? Yes. Did you look up the actor Taye Diggs? Does Taye Diggs follow you?
Yeah, I can right now. Taye Diggs, right?
Yeah. It's not hard. Just type it in and see if he... But anyway, I don't know, a couple years ago or something, I got a notification that Taye Diggs was following me. I'm like, wow, how cool is that? What was this mistake? And then I looked, Taye Diggs has like 658,000 followers, and he's following 652,000 people. So clearly his strategy is to follow everybody. They'll follow him back, and then it looks like he's got a great social media following. Well, the fact is, the people then following him aren't really engaged in what he has to say, so what he tweets or what he shares probably doesn't have the impact that the number of his followers would imply, because they're not actively following him. You see
maybe
what I'm saying?
So, sure,
it's
but
like, it's not like buying fake people. Don't get me wrong.
Well, that's why it's different. That's why Taye Diggs is not the same as Richard Roper.
I agree, but what I'm saying is that we can't just be you can't put too much stock.
If you're following just a follow to get follows, then it's not as impressive.
You can't put too much stock, John, in just the number. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay, but we do. The Sun-Times does. But, Roper probably gets the job again anyway because he's just terrific at it. Sure he does, but does it help him to say, and I have 250,000 followers, when maybe he has 20,000 followers that are legitimate? I think that matters. Maybe it matters in how much money he can negotiate for his contract. Maybe it matters in how often he gets retweeted or how often other reporters look at his stuff, because now he's seen as a social mover rather than just another guy throwing stuff out there.
Well, especially because a newspaper needs to go as digital as possible, right? To go on a different platform and get different types of readers or people that follow.
Well, if that's the case, I hope he is getting paid more for his social media following. If the Sun-Times is using his social media following, right, to further their product, he should be getting some scratch out of that.
Yeah, but now that's the...
But now there's a problem.
That's the fraud of it all, isn't it?
If in his contract he says he's getting paid more because of a...
Well, but I mean, this is what has also happened. So the New York Times, why are we talking about this, did a major expose on Sunday. You talked about it on your show yesterday on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and I talked about it with one of the people that actually wrote the story. So my thing is probably better. Anyway...
Well, your best story is what happened after the show. Are you going to tell that part?
Yeah, because okay. I read the story. I highlighted the names in it. I was very interested in who is being busted for it, right? Clay Aiken. You could throw a few in here, Steve, but it's kind of delicious to see the people that are being exposed.
Kathy Ireland, Lori Grenier.
I know. The Kathy Ireland one, I think, is maybe the most interesting.
John Leguizamo.
I know. So there's all of these people that are exposed, and one of them is the Chicago Sun-Times' Richard Roper. His name does not appear in the print edition. It must appear in the online version. So we did the whole interview with the reporter from the New York Times about it, never even asking about Richard Roper. And then afterwards, literally as the interview is wrapping up, you bust in and say, by the way, the Sun-Times has sidelined Roper because of the story whose author we were interviewing, not knowing that Roper was in it. Too bad for us, but I don't know that it changes anything. Roper's not in the newspaper today, and today he would have been. I think that, Steve, if you are representing yourself that way, and Kathy Ireland is a good example, if you say, I've got 1 million followers, companies will love it if you endorse them. Right. Sometimes they'll pay you to endorse them. But what if of the 1 million followers, only 100,000 of them are real? 90% of your footprint is fake.
Now, I was talking about this not with Nick Confessori from the New York Times, but with Randy Schaefer, a digital editor at the Tribune, and she said that when people contract with these influencers, there are ways you can find out how genuine their number is. So it is detectable.
Yeah, right.
I guess my feeling is that I just don't believe any of that stuff much. I don't put a lot of stock in any of it. You know, I don't, just because you have a lot of followers doesn't mean you have influence. There are other ways to measure that.
Every day you look at your social media pages, your Facebook, your Instagram, your Twitter. If your Twitter following was as Taye Diggs is, and by the way, he does not follow me.
Loser.
I just started following him, so I'll bet you will. In fact, he has 682,000 followers.
Yeah.
He follows 692,000. He follows more people than follow him. That shows what his
method
is.
And so then what that says is that those people following him aren't engaged enough with him to reach out to follow him. So his strength could be less important than if you're seeking someone out to follow. So I guess my point is it all depends on how much value you put in that particular currency.
How much do you put in it, Steve? If your social media number was 300,000, wouldn't you feel pretty good about
that? Yeah, I'd love it.
And don't you think I would be envious of that? And don't you think I would pay a little more attention to what you have to say? The answer is yes.
Yeah, maybe that's the point, though.
And that's the fraud.
So think of it, and I wouldn't do it. I don't think you should do it. I think, especially now, if it's going to be declared wrong, but consider it coming out of your marketing budget, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And in my marketing budget, I've got $10,000 that I'm going to spend to increase my Twitter following. One way to do that is to hire or create fake followers that make me more attractive, that create more followers for me of the real sort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm not making money on it or cashing in on the fake ones, it's marketing.
Okay, I don't know. I think Violetta's right. It looks like you're putting stuff on your resume that seems relatively harmless, but it's making you look better than you really are. And you're not supposed to do that. It's beyond questionable. It's wrong. A text is just poured in from David, who used to intern with us here. He said he's listening to us, I believe, in Missouri right now. Thank you, David, for that. John, it's less about the followers you have and more about how engaging that following is. Well, sure, David. Thank you for that. Violetta was saying something like that off the
air. Well,
that's
exactly what I was saying, and there are ways to measure that.
Yeah. Okay. Well...
And you can fake a resume and get the job, but you're not going to be able to do the job, and that's going to be pretty evident once you faked your resume.
I know. Well, it'd be like, what if you had a billboard for a restaurant? And at the end of the day, the restaurant will live or die by the strength of the food and the service. But the billboard said that we have a 5-star review from Gourmet Magazine, and you didn't. Sure, it matters how good the food is, but I'm just talking not about that. I'm talking about the billboard.
Right, so people will go there once and then never return.
Fair enough. I don't even like that. I mean, you're right. The proof will ultimately be in the pudding. Are you a good writer? Roper's one of this city's best. So he'll survive if they let him. Their problem is, do we let him? And right now he's on the sidelines. Hi, John. I am a Richard Roper follower. Yeah, I followed. I'll bet Roper's legitimate following has gone way up today. I'll bet more people are following him than not. John, Black Mirror has come true again. Did they do an episode like that? John, stars like Kathy Ireland probably have publicists who handle their social media. That's how they dodge culpability in this sometimes, I say.
There was a novel a couple years ago about people, and one of the characters, his job was to drum up enthusiasm on social media for things. You know, for a concert, he would pretend like he was a regular guy, and he'd build this enthusiasm to sell concert tickets. I mean, it's the web, folks. It's okay. Not what it looks like.
Sure enough, but at least that's a human being who paid or legitimately is trying to gin up enthusiasm for X, right?
Okay.
That's not what this is.
Well, if you were reading that, you'd be like, wow, John, this guy John really loves this band. It must be great. I'm going to go see it, when he'd never seen the band. I mean, I just don't put a lot of weight in anything I see in social media sites like that.
Boy, there goes the interwebs. It's 129. Why didn't you tell me that stuff on the internet might not be true? It's time to pause. Steve will give you WGN Radio News. Afterwards, a documentarian from Chicago, from the Chicago Media Project, talks about their film, nominated this year for Best Documentary at the Oscars. And what a story it is. That's all coming up on WGN. I watched today a documentary film called Icarus. It is, you can see it right now yourself on Netflix. It's about doping. It's about doping in the Olympics. It's about doping in the Tour de France. It's really fascinating. And if you've ever wondered about it and you thought, oh, I've heard about that, I know about that, they fudge the urine samples or do whatever, but you've never actually seen them do it, like 7 cups of urine in a row and then talking about what the process is and how would you ever get video of that. Well, here it is, folks. It's fascinating. The movie's really well done. It's not a short. It's almost a 2-hour-long film, and it's just fascinating and comprehensive. And the consequences of it are more dire than you might imagine. The movie is called Icarus, and with the Oscars and the Olympics right around the corner, I highly recommend it, particularly since it was produced by the Chicago Media Project. The co-producer, the co-executive producer of that is a woman named Paula Fraley, and she's in our studio here on WGN. Paula, welcome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You must be thrilled with how the movie came out.
We are absolutely thrilled and not at all surprised. I mean, it is an incredible story, just like you said. And for Brian Fogel, the director, he literally fell into and uncovered this much larger story when he set out to just prove that doping was happening all across sport.
In fact, let's just tell the story there, and then we'll come back to the Chicago Media Project. What was his point? What was he going to do? He was going to actually start doping himself.
Yes, he was looking for a coach to work with him to set up a doping regimen. He was competing in, I believe it's called the Haute Cycling Race. And
a 7-day race, each stage of which is equivalent to the most difficult stage of the Tour de France.
Yes.
Seven grueling days.
Grueling days.
And so he was going to dope himself for that event.
Yeah, you know, he competed and then
over
the course of a year doped to compete again. To
he competed clean.
Yes,
and
he
did really well.
Yeah, I think he was like 11th or 12th maybe. Mm-hmm. And so then he set up a doping regimen to compete again to show that it would both have an impact on his results, as well as he was going to then be tested at the end of it to prove that he could do it in such a way to be clean for a competition.
But his point was to bust the whole thing, right? To say, look, I know I took the drugs. I'm telling you I took the drugs, and I got away with it.
Yeah. Yeah, all of it was inspired because Lance Armstrong was, icon to him. And so he just couldn't believe that it was Lance operating solo that caused his downfall.
So who does he find to cooperate with him?
So initially, he goes to the UCLA lab director and a guy named Don Catlin, who then he's interested, but then he gets a little his cold feet. So then he says, I have this friend who I know, Gregory Rodchenkov.
He has Russia.
The Russian lab. He may be interested. And you literally see all of this happening in the film. You're literally right alongside Brian. And so you see his Skype calls with Gregory. You see what a charismatic and funny person Gregory is, and you share Brian's kind of questioning about how Gregory so enthusiastically says, yes, I'll be your coach. I'll be the one who
designs
it.
But Gregory was in fact doing it and cheating for the Russians, right?
Yes, exactly.
All along. I mean, there's these people winning in swimming and running and weightlifting, and that's because Gregory was doping them.
Yes, through instruction from folks much higher up.
Fair enough, but why would Gregory then want to cooperate and essentially out himself and the Russian program?
You know, that's really the big question. And I think over the course of the film, you really come to see different reasons. I mean, there isn't the, what we love about this documentary is it leaves it to the audience to kind of conclude what his motivations were. In the end, I believe his motivation was to stay alive. As they were looking at the lab and he leaves, he exits because he fears for his life.
Yeah, that's where this movie, as I said, gets a little more sinister, a little more grave than you might even imagine. It's not just the games at stake. Some people are worried about their lives, and it's all captured on film.
Mm-hmm. It's a great story. I mean, it really plays like a thriller.
What does it make you think then, going into the Olympics? I mean, what's your personal assessment? You didn't direct this movie, you co-produced it, but you've been kind of consumed by this. How legit are the games?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, it does bring the question of, is Russia the only country that has a system like this?
Well, the only country to be caught more than Russia is the United States.
Yeah.
So there's that, y'all. Okay, so then what does Chicago have to do with this?
Well, so Steve Cohen and I co-founded an organization called Chicago Media Project 4 years ago with the goal of creating a community of supporters for great documentary films and great stories. Last July, we got a call from the producer of Icarus asking us if we would come and take a look at the cut. They were looking for some funding. They needed to get it completed. And what he told us was, you can come and look at the cut, but you have to show up on a street corner somewhere on the West Coast, and we will direct you from there.
Why so secretive about you seeing the raw cut of the movie?
They were, at the time, they had very strong concerns about who was following them and the story.
Sure. This is explosive and specific enough. They were literally worried at that time they approached you that the Russians were following them and might have done anything to keep this movie from getting distributed.
Absolutely.
Can you, I mean, they had to make a movie about the making of the movie.
They should. Yeah. They should.
Okay, so you did that.
So, yes, we showed up on a street corner. We went into the back of a dentist's office. We watched an edit. And at the end of it, looked at each other and said, I hope nobody tracked us coming into this room, because this is an incredible story. Yeah. And this will be one that changes the landscape of sports. It changes the landscape of politics. And this is exactly the kind of story that Chicago Media Project wants to support.
You personally had a background. You were at Tribeca Flashpoint Academy.
Yes.
Left there to co-found this Chicago Media Project. What's the MO for the Chicago Media Project?
So our goal is to develop and enrich this community that actually already exists here in Chicago and across the country, of individuals who believe in the power of media to bring about change in the world. That we are all in this, media-saturated culture. Our stories and our information comes through the media. And so if you can use that and tell stories that can generate empathy, generate awareness, and activate people to bring about some change in the world, maybe you can be a pretty powerful force.
When you say media, do you mean video media? Do you mean documentary film media? Is that what the Chicago Media Project is about?
Our core funding is for documentary films, and in particular documentary feature films. But we also support shorter form media that gets circulated through social media channels. We're looking at podcasts. We're at our Doc 10 Film Festival in the spring. We're going to have some VR. So we really are interested that what's at its core is a great story based in reality.
Based in reality. I mean, we're skirting around the elephant in the room. The president is insistent that the media is too often inaccurate and untruthful, and purposefully so. And the Washington Post has counted 2,000 separate lies they said the president told, including posting videos that were purportedly of Islamic terrorists and may well not have been. What do you all have to say about this landscape we're in right now?
Well, I think that people are looking for truth and integrity and information they can trust. And I think even beyond that, they're looking for engaging stories and ones that really talk about individuals that are connected to these bigger issues.
But it's harder to do that these days, don't you think?
Yeah.
Is it more important to do it these days?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do think that documentary films are one of the ways in which people are looking to get information about what's happening in the world, because there's this sense that a documentary filmmaker will oftentimes embed themselves for years with individuals. And so what you're seeing is what's happening in the moment, and there's a truth to it that I think, and there's a depth to the storytelling.
Yeah.
That in the age of Twitter, I think people are looking for something.
I think that is what impresses a lot of us, that if you've ever watched a documentary film, you have to at least be impressed with the commitment that filmmaker had, knowing full well, as they said at the Oscars a couple of years ago, that they're going to be driving home in a Honda Accord. That they ain't going to get rich doing this. Yeah. They have to be committed to this subject, and they immerse themselves in it, and hopefully they get it right. There's a scene in the movie, Icarus, we're talking about. It's going to be showing at the Davis Theater, February 22nd. You can get tickets not only to that special screening. There's a dinner before and then a Q&A with the director of the movie afterwards. Wow, does that sound like a good idea? Go to chicagomediaproject.org. There's a scene in the movie where Oprah Winfrey has Lance Armstrong. And Lance had been evasive forever. We never knew And so she said, I want a one-word answer to this question. Did you take performance-enhancing drugs to cheat and win? And he says, yes. And you think, boy, that was a big moment.
Yes.
That was a big moment for a lot of us.
A
for
lot.
This whole topic.
I think that was really the trigger for Brian to start this whole pursuit that led to this unbelievably explosive place. And, you know, here we are, the Olympics.
So what's the next project you all are working on?
Well, there's a lot. As far as Chicago Media Project goes, in April, we'll be doing our Doc 10 Film Festival, where we bring 10 equally as fascinating and interesting docs as Icarus to Chicago at the Davis Theater, April 5th through the 8th. Along with feature-length docs, we also are going to do a VR, what we're calling our VR RV, which is an RV outfitted with virtual reality headsets, so you can experience documentary media in a new way. We'll also bring in the directors and producers of the films and do some other content, music, etc. It's a weekend celebration of what we love, which is documentary film.
Well, we should connect in April then when you do that, when these filmmakers come to town.
That'd be great.
I'd love to see us blow it up to the size of the True False Film Festival or some of those ones.
Isn't that amazing?
That's
an amazing film festival.
Which is in, it's not in Joplin.
Columbia.
Columbia, mm-hmm. Missouri. Imagine that. And it's in February. It's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's coming up. And it's a fantastic festival.
This little college, this big college town turns itself over to documentary films. Some of them are great and famous, and some of them are not. And you all walk around with badges. You pay a modest fee. You stay in the Best Western there. And all you do is go see movies for however many days you want to do it and drink coffee. And it's really fun.
Sounds like heaven to some of us.
Yeah, right. And maybe not. But, you know, well, I'm not a geek for this sort of thing. I'm really not. I went to that because a friend of mine was there, and I would go again. Mm-hmm. But even if you're not a documentary film nut, it's really fun to immerse yourself into those people who are.
Yes.
Very welcoming, very fun. So we've got one coming up, our own version of that, 10 films in April. In the meantime, let's go to the Davis Theater in Lincoln Square, February 22nd. I assume tickets are still available, Laura, for this? For Davis Theater in Lincoln Square, go to chicagomediaproject.org and not only support this movie, but support what you all do, chicagomediaproject.org. Paula Fraley, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much. It was great.
Well done. I'm a fan of this movie, and you will be too when you watch it. One more time, the website for our guest just a moment ago, Paula Fraley. Go to chicagomediaproject.org. Speaking of the finer points, so it's almost fitting, isn't it? 1 year ago, Donald Trump became president of the United States. His State of the Union address is this evening. After his inauguration, they put out a swell poster of him with a great big smile, his signature at the bottom, and the presidential seal. And there is a quote from the president. It said, "No dream is too big, no challenge is too great." Donald Trump. They misspelled the word "too" on the official poster. Don't you just hate it when that happens? Of course you do. So then you say to your people, listen, the next time we're doing something like this, I don't know, a year from now when we do the State of the Union address, let's make sure we get everything right. They sent out invitations and the invitations had a typo. They misspelled the words State of the Union. Instead of State of the Union, you were officially invited to the State of the Union. UNIOM. And I know M's look like N's. It could happen. But you'd think that if you were the president of the United States and you had a million people working for you, some of them with spell check, you would go, okay, guys, better not get this one wrong. And they got it wrong.
Is that on the White House or the Congress?
Fair point. I take back everything I said, Your Honor.
No, I don't know the answer to it, but
I'm not sure who that would be on.
It's their party.
Well, okay.
They invite the president.
Yeah, that's well played, Steve Bertrand. Thank you for being stand up about that. I don't know. But let's put it this way. If somebody was going to put a poster out on my behalf, I mean, it is the president giving the State of the Union, I would still say, hey, just run it by, I don't know, Jared. Jared, make sure you look and make sure the Congress, because they're a bunch of losers, make sure the Congress doesn't screw it up. It would reflect badly on us.
It just seems like they're always in a rush. Whoever his editor, or lack thereof, is always in a rush.
Remember when they, after, what was the terrorist act? After San Bernardino. And they were talking about how often there are attacks in the United States. And we got to do something about these immigrants. And so they published a list of all of the attacks with the name of the attacker. And there were names like Abu Numan Haider and Jung Il Qaeda in Algeria, et cetera, et cetera. And over 20 times they misspelled the word attacker. Sometimes they got it right. Mostly they got it wrong. You would think attacker. That's not a tough one. You could get attacker right. And maybe they were in a hurry. They wanted to make the point, but it devalues the point when you don't pay enough attention to the spelling. Makes you wonder what else they got wrong.
Snopes says it was the responsibility of the House of Representatives Sergeant at Arms.
I take it back. The administration gets a pass on this one, but they don't get a pass on the time they misspelled Theresa May. Theresa May came to visit, and they said, here's what we're going to do with Theresa May, Theresa May, Theresa May. Every time they misspelled the word Theresa. And then there was the time they said that there'll be a speech given by Steve Mnuchin, who, as you know, is the Secretary of Commerce, except he's the Secretary of Treasury. And then when he went to Israel, they bragged about how he will lead to lasting peace. And if you think about it, what wouldn't be better than a lasting peach? You could have that peach today, but you could eat it years from now. It would be a lasting peach.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
There we go.
Here's John Williams.
In fact, in this house, we'll have like three. It's 2:08. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue.
Lord have mercy.
Don't forget, we do a Saturday show that we think is pretty swell. That goes from 10 a.m. till noon. Like me on Facebook. I'm King John there. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter. We posted a video today on Instagram and Twitter that highlights the new app we've created, which you access on my Facebook page. Maybe we should put it on the Facebook page, too, just so people can share it now that I think about it. But right now it lives on my Instagram page. What's my Instagram handle there, Ms. Garris? It's
WGN John Williams.
WGN John Williams. I'm WGN King John on Twitter. We should have kept them the same, but there it is. I'm King John on Facebook. That was bad planning on my part. Anyway, like me on Instagram or Twitter. And there you'll see a video which shows you how you can get essentially that app that doesn't exist in Illinois. You upload a picture of yourself. You can do that. And then we will find an exact duplicate of you in a painting hanging in a museum somewhere in the world. The side-by-sides are hilarious, and we've made a video showing that on Instagram and Twitter. WGN King John on Twitter. And it's amazing, ladies, what you are doing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Elif, the posting is awesome. Violetta, you're the eyeballs on this thing. I still can't believe you're finding some of these.
I sent you mine, right, that I got in Ohio, because I was in Ohio.
Yeah, so you're using another app now.
Well, I was using the real app.
So here's what happens. Since it doesn't exist in Illinois, we've agreed to do it manually for you. It's laborious, it's tedious, but I don't care because we're making Violetta and Elif do all the work. So we do one for Steve Bertrand, and Steve didn't like his likeness. So then he went out of state where the app is available. Then it pops up on your phone, it knows where you are, and then Google will do it for you automatically.
I actually think the one that Steve got looks very similar to the one that I got, the first option, because you sent two options.
One second here. First of all, I did it because you couldn't do it here, and I was somewhere where you could.
Right.
You drove to Ohio just because I didn't like your Violetta's. Picture. Yeah.
It turns out I think I liked Violetta's choice for me more than Chester Arthur, the former president.
I think that the one that Violetta found for you is not all that fair. I wish you would find something a little more handsome. You know who?
You're too superficial. It's the charismatic features, and you're not looking beyond, you know? I have an eye for this, John.
Totally agree. I don't want to argue with the app because I think you're right. Some of them don't match perfectly, but there's an aura that comes off the painting that tends to match the aura or the vibe you get from the picture. And I do believe, Violetta, you did capture that for Steve, even if it's not a perfect likeness.
Thank you.
Fair enough.
I'm good at judging people.
Chicago Magazine has a story titled, Chicago isn't even close to being the gun violence capital of the United States. It's something we've talked about on this show a lot because the President of the United States talks about it a lot. But that's not why they did it this time. They did it because Amazon is looking for a place to locate its new headquarters. Chicago's in the top 20 And so Webb Mosher, who writes for them, he is their, what's his exact title here, associate editor, wrote the following. The other day, Chicago made the list of Amazon's 20 finalists for its second headquarters. This is one of the first pieces I read about it. Quote, cons, shootings in the city have become national news, and the state is still emerging from dire financial straits. And then there were stories that reiterated that point in the New York Times and Cranes, the Tribune, the USA Today, BEZ, etc. That's not good. Then he went to the graphs and charts and wrote in more detail about it. And what do you know? It's not as it necessarily appears. Wet, welcome to the studio. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for having me.
So you were interested in it not from a, I'm tired of seeing Chicago get kicked around, but more, how viable are we for a major corporate headquarters?
Yeah, exactly. And in comparison to some of the other cities that Amazon's named as its long list of finalists.
So is that what I have here? Atlanta, Chicago, Pittsburgh?
Yeah, those are the majority of them. Ones that there are a few that don't show up in the FBI's uniform crime reporting statistics, which are where I drew that from.
Yeah. Well, these are the big cities.
Yeah.
And most notably, you've got Washington, D.C. in there. That's Washington, right?
Mm-hmm.
And New York, New Jersey, which is also five of the 20 are New York, New Jersey, and the Washington, D.C. area, as well as Chicago and Nashville, et cetera. And what did you find?
I found that Chicago, where they rank in terms of homicide, it's near the top of the finalists, but maybe not as high as you might think based on the how much it's talked about in the national media from a just per 100,000 statistics. In terms of violent crime, it's closer to the middle. There are cities that have considerably less violent crime than Chicago, but there are several that have a higher violent crime rate. Now, it's worth remembering that the FBI is cautious about using these as rankings because they're, you know, cities are very different. They have different means of reporting and different socioeconomic issues that go into them. So it's probably worth thinking about them less as some sort of absolute value of how much crime there is in a city, then this is the data that, in theory, a company would look at when they're deciding to move to a city or not.
But when I look at violent crime, or the president does, and the murder rate, those are different things. You survive violent crimes often. Murders, obviously, you don't. But you looked at more than just that, because you weren't interested in just that. But again, would I want to locate my company there? Do I want to immerse new employees in this place? So then you looked at things like crash death rate. That mm-hmm. would be, I guess, a quality of life thing. You know, are the highways so dangerous that people are dying left and right? And in that, Chicago does really well, mm-hmm. don't we? Per 100,000, 13 people in Nashville can figure they're going to die in a crash, 13 out of 100,000. We are third from the last on this list at 5.9. Mm-hmm. We're about as safe a city to drive in as any of the contenders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by virtue of that statistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got that going for us. Tell the president that. This isn't about the president. I'll stop referencing him. And then pedestrian fatalities. Why did you look at that?
Well, Amazon, one of the things that they mentioned in their request for proposals and they've sort of talked about in the media is that they want to live in a city where they want to place their headquarters in a city that people have all sorts of different means of getting to work, that somewhere that's, you know, dense and urban that people can walk, and that's, you know, something to that generally a city that's better at that will have, you know, lower pedestrian accident rates, and we do pretty well in that. And it's
in Miami, for every 100,000, 2.6 will die as a pedestrian. Los Angeles, 1.8. Philly, 1.6. New York, 1.6. Atlanta, 1.5. Keep going down, 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 down. Fourth from the last is Chicago, mm-hmm. 1.1. So one in 100,000 here, closer to three in Miami. I don't know that that's statistically significant enough to factor into where you put your headquarters, but there's another quality of living statistic, and we do very well.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder which is more important to them, pedestrians and motorists dying, or people dying because of violent crime or being the victim of a violent crime?
Yeah, it's a tough question. It's, I mean, one thing One thing that you might consider in terms of the city's reputation versus the actual data about it is, you know, would Amazon have trouble attracting employees who might have, you know, seen a bunch of headlines? But if you're sort of looking at the data, which is something that Amazon theoretically will be doing, that's kind of what they're known for, then, you know, the city does not look as dangerous as the headlines make it out to be.
Sure. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because you're right. Hopefully Amazon will do their due diligence and not just read USA Today about this. That is, of the 20 cities, we're right up there at the top for homicide rate, right? I mean, we're about as deadly a city as any of the ones that Amazon currently is considering. Mm-hmm. Fair enough,
yeah.
Right? Atlanta, 21. We're 20.4. Pittsburgh, 20.1. Washington, 19.8, et cetera. When I've talked about these statistics on my show, I wasn't using it through the filter of who is Amazon considering. I was just saying, the president's kicking Chicago around as this deadly city. How do we do compared to other cities? Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? If the murder rate in Chicago is in the upper teens or 20, in New Orleans, it's 46, but they're not in the running. They're not on your list. Detroit, 45. St. Louis, good old St. Louis, all-American St. Louis, smaller St. Louis, three times as likely to be killed, die of a homicide in St. Louis as you are in Chicago. Baltimore, Oakland, Kansas City, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Atlanta, Philly, Memphis, Buffalo, much more dangerous than Chicago. A different conversation, but then there is Chicago as maybe the, 15th deadliest city among major American cities. If you're worried about being killed, being shot to death, that's important. But we're not nearly as bad as the president makes us out compared to the city he came from or the city he's living in. But when you look at just the cities that Amazon is considering, now we're back at the top. I wonder how Amazon will judge that then. Of the 20 finalists, Chicago is one of the deadliest. But they could have considered and did virtually any city in the United States. Mm-hmm. And we're actually relatively safe compared to other cities mm-hmm. in this country, right? I'm a bee and a booster here. You can feel free to tell me I'm full of crap.
I would say that for the largest cities in the country, for the very largest, the top, you know, five, Chicago has a higher crime rate than most of them. But if you sort of expand that out, it is sort of on the higher end, but it's comparable to other cities that have sort of similar problems.
Yeah. This is a terrible thing to say, but it's the truth, too. If you have your headquarters and you put it where the old post office is, or out in Oak Brook where the McDonald's campus is, if you put it in either of those places, the staff, the employees, where they work and where they live, they would be safe because it's not on the west side or the south side. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, these numbers in Chicago are about the west side and the south side. It's not about the Loop. It's not about the Gold Coast. It's not about Oak Brook. So if you came to Chicago, in a way, these numbers aren't even all that germane.
Yeah, and that's true for other cities as well. I know that
fair enough.
Indianapolis has sort of similar problems with certain neighborhoods where the concentration of homicide is extremely high, but it's not a citywide issue. And I'm assuming that's also something that Amazon would want to drill down into. And that's why I brought up the crash fatality rates, because that might be sort of a more applicable form of public safety than the citywide homicide rate.
Webb Mosier's in our studio, associate editor at Chicago Magazine. What do you all think our chances are of getting the headquarters? Handicap this for me.
I think we're a pretty good candidate. I think it's got a good balance of what Amazon has said that it's looking for. It's a dense city with a lot of different modes of public transportation. It's got a very good tech scene. It's got extremely good universities that they can draw from. University of Illinois downstate is one of the best tech schools in the world. I think what's tricky about it is we don't know if Amazon wants a specific kind of tech scene. So Amazon, as we know, is kind of a logistics company, and Chicago is a very, very good logistics tech scene. But say if they want robotics, then maybe they would want to go to Atlanta, where they have Georgia Tech, which is very strong in robotics. If they want to be near their data centers, their big data centers are in the Washington, D.C. area and in Columbus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it just seems to me like if I was shipping stuff to all four corners of the country, I think it'd be smart to be in the middle. Miami, mm-hmm. as it turns out, isn't. New York isn't. Washington, D.C. isn't. You know, I would go Columbus, Dallas, Chicago, Indianapolis, one of those places. Mm-hmm. I think we slay Indianapolis and some of those other places as well. Again, I'm being a booster. John, would Amazon also have warehousing and distribution with the headquarters? Would, you know, that's what I'm thinking of. Would it have that?
Not that I've seen reported.
Yeah. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is corporate. This is corporate headquarters.
Yeah.
It's not where all the boxes live.
Yeah, this would be a second corporate headquarters.
Yeah. John, it's all about the money. What is the tax break they will receive? Yeah, we could do a graph chart on that. Let's forget about homicide rates and transportation. Just show me how much money I'm going to get. Frankly, I think we'd give them the store. We'd give them anything they want. Of course, all of the states and cities probably are doing that, huh?
Yeah. From what I've seen, Chicago is not on the high end of the tax breaks that would be given out. Newark, I believe, would be over $7 billion.
You know what? If they want to do that, then fine, let them. I mean, no, seriously. At some point, why are you doing this, but you want to make money? If you give away $7 billion, how long do you have to have them in the... And it's almost a matter of dignity or respect. It's like, yes, we'd be a great place for your employees to live and work, but don't hold me up. I resent you putting a gun to my back, and whoever leaves their hands up the longest gets to have the headquarters. Hopefully, there's more to it than just that. You'll read about it in, is this the latest issue, Wet? I saw it online not that long ago.
This was just online, so it was online last week.
And I'll find it in print?
It's just online, so...
Yeah, oh, and this exists just online?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's called Should Chicago Worry About Its Crime in Wooing Amazon? Wet Mosier wrote about that at chicagomag.com, chicagomag.com. But thanks for coming into the studio today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to see you. State of the Union address tonight at 8 o'clock our time.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly how I'm going to watch this.
How are you going to watch it, John?
Standing. And I'll be off center and back. And I'll probably have a cocktail. I'll watch it. I need to watch it.
Yeah.
Literally, proximity to it will... The further I am away, the easier it'll be to take.
So you're not going to take it sitting down?
No, I'm not, actually. I mean, I literally know that's what I'll do. I get antsy. I can't sit and watch TV much anyway. And then if it's something that's going to give me anxiety, I know that I can't just sit there and literally take it. So I'll be moving about. I may do a load of laundry. I'll almost certainly have a martini. And I'm just kind of going to be kind of a cat on the prowl, just kind of moving about. I know that's exactly how I'll do this.
Okay.
But you and I were talking yesterday about who the president will invite. This whole seating chart tonight is as fascinating as it's ever been. I believe there's about a dozen lawmakers who now say they're going to boycott it. I think they should be there. A couple of them from Illinois, in fact, are not going to come. And then the cutaways. Some of the lawmakers are inviting guests, and they're using it for political purposes. That woman in Michigan, whose husband was deported, is going to be there in the gallery. And the president has about a dozen people that will be there, some of them, of course, sitting next to the first lady. Who did the president invite, and what are the issues that they'll therefore highlight? In 10 minutes. Let's talk about the Super Bowl for a second. Our Adam Hoge is at Ground Zero for the Super Bowl, and by that I believe the Mall of America. At least I think that's where he is. Hi, Adam, how are you?
Hey, John, I am. I'm right in the middle of the mall, which I'm sure you know well here.
I do.
They literally put us like right where people walk around, right in the middle of this thing, right in the middle of all the shops and the food court.
So you're on the perimeter, that great big square walk around, you're just lining it there?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of nice. You see all kinds of people going by, don't you?
It's a fun setup. They got TV, you know, makeshift TV studio set up for all the sports networks, and then all the radio people kind of sprinkled in around. It's a little bit different for the Super Bowl, for sure.
You, by the way, are hosting Sports Central, which has returned to WGNRadio.com. So we can find you on the stream from, help me now, 1 to 2 each day, right?
Correct. We just got done doing our first show, John. It was a lot of fun.
Kudos. I'll bet it was awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, it went well. A lot of fun here. Orlando Pace, who you remember, may remember, he played for the Bears for 1 year, but he's really known for playing for the Rams, Hall of Fame left tackle, also went to Ohio State. He was on the show today. And then we got the local perspective from Paul Allen, who the Vikings play-by-play guy, who's had a tough couple weeks, as you can imagine, John.
What do you mean? Because of the way
just
they lost.
The highs of the Minnesota Miracle, and then the low of not even really showing up in Philadelphia.
One of the worst playoff games, say conference championship games, you'll ever see.
Yeah, it was. I think I told you this last week. I had a weird bad feeling early for the Vikings. And locally here, the pulse is that they're just kind of annoyed that the Super Bowl's here now. I don't blame them.
I know. You've got to not only host it, you were that close to having a home team, but now you've got to host it for the team that kicked your butt and be gracious about it.
And all the Eagles fans are here. So last night at the opening ceremonies, I guess is kind of what they're calling at the XL Energy Center in St. Paul, obviously a lot of local Minnesotans here in the stands, and the Eagles trot out there, and so the fans obviously boo the Eagles because they just beat their team, and so the Eagles fans in attendance start doing the skull chant at them, and that was just cold.
You know, I don't know. If you're the Eagles fans, think about this. Just if you're an Eagle fan or the Eagles, think about it from the Minnesota standpoint. They're hosting you. Of course they're ticked and hurt and angry. So let them boo and take it and don't stuff it back in their face. But that's what happens, huh?
These people here are hurting. I mean, they really thought. I think about the year the Bears lost to the Packers in the NFC Championship. I mean, it took a couple weeks for people to get over that. And it's the same thing here, except the Super Bowl, the team that beat you is. I mean, could you imagine if the Packers had then played for the Super Bowl in Chicago right after beating them? That
you look out,
awful.
Green and white jerseys everywhere. Oh. Hey, let's go to the bars and restaurants in Chicago. And it's, those
and then they won it too.
Yeah. So, are people talking at all about this Tom Brady daughter story today?
Yes. In fact, we just played some of the audio on Sports Central, and I went through it a little bit. And I mean, my take on this situation is I think Tom Brady handled it amazingly well.
I do too.
I can't imagine if anyone said anything negatively about my son. You know, and I know just from working in this business and interviewing football players every day, athletes in general, kids are off limits. They're just off limits. There's no reason to take a shot at a five-year-old, no matter who you are, let alone a radio host who has a radio deal with the most prominent football player in the entire NFL. So it's stupid from a professional standpoint and stupid from a humanitarian standpoint too. And so for Tom Brady to take the high road the way he did, not only address it, but then say that he also doesn't want the guy fired, I thought was really classy.
I guess Tom Brady has a YouTube or Facebook channel show that features his family. His daughter appears in a lot of the episodes they post. And this talk show host at a sports station in Boston was critical of the child's performance in the show. He thought he doesn't like this kid, and he called her a name that he should not have. Is that station that host works on the station that does the games? Do they have the contract?
I was actually trying to figure this out earlier today because
why would he have the Tom Brady interview if they weren't the Patriots station?
Well, and that's what I thought. But walking around here on Radio Row today, there's another station here called the Sports Hub out of Boston, and they advertise on their signage that they're the home of the New England Patriots. So I find it very interesting because apparently it's not just Tom Brady. But the Patriots have some kind of side deal with the other station in Boston.
Evidently, because why? Because this guy, it makes no sense for this guy to be running down Tom Brady and his daughter if they were the hometown station. That wouldn't happen. So he must be on another station. Did that DJ or talk show host get fired then for what he said?
He has been put on a temporary leave of absence or suspended indefinitely, they're wording it.
Until they figure it out.
And I think they're trying to figure it out right now because guess what? Tom Brady's trying to figure out if he keeps he wants to keep coming on the station, and I don't blame him for that.
Well, he sort of said, listen, I don't want to talk to you guys anymore today. And they said, okay, cool, we get it. And now he's got to evaluate if he's going to still have a contract with that station, which, and by the way, those contracts, It's amazing how much money those athletes get to pick up their phone, laying in bed. When Jim McMahon, after the year of the Super Bowl or the year after, Jim McMahon would lay there in bed and give the worst interviews in history.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you were amused by him, but I just thought he was so mailing it in. But that was Jim McMahon. You didn't expect him to be warm and bubbly anyway. And he made hundreds of thousands of dollars for doing that.
Yep. Yeah. Jay Cutler recently had a show in Chicago, similar type deal. Going behind the scenes here a little bit, for any radio host, if you have a guest that's contracted through the station, you got to be careful about that stuff. It's just not smart.
So just give me one, I'll let you go here, Adam, and we'll talk later in the week. And
sure.
By the way, listen to Adam Hoge now. Sports Central, you remember it, is now at WGNRadio.com. After Bill and Wendy do their hour at noon on the stream, you can check out Adam and catch up on the world of sports. If that is your cup of tea, and I know it is for a lot of you, listen to Adam at WGNRadio.com at 1. Just give me one football thing. What should I pay attention to today relative to the game itself?
Today the big news is that Tom Brady is still wearing gloves on his hands. So, look, it's still early in Super Bowl week, so these are the types of stories you get as he sits. And I think Tom Brady's just having fun with the media right now. The stitches were pulled out of his hand.
He had 10 of them, right?
Yeah. The number has been, it's somewhere between 4 and 12. Okay? All right. But
I think it was 100. I think he almost lost it. I think the arm almost came off.
Right. Well, if they win, then I think the legend will say that it was 100 stitches and he played through it. But, look, so it's still pretty early in the week, and also, it's now been revealed that it's an Under Armour glove, so maybe he's turning this into a little bit of a promotional opportunity for him, which, good for him, is Tom Brady. And I do want to say, John, for your listeners that want to keep listening to you between 1 and 2 as well, part of the reason we're putting Sports Central out the way we are is we're pushing it out as a podcast all day long. So really, whenever they want to listen to Sports Central, it's available on iTunes, the Google Play Store, and we encourage people to listen on demand and live if they'd like to.
That's nice of you to put it that way. What's the search if I'm doing it on demand?
If you go to iTunes or Google Play, depending on what kind of device you have, the best way to find it is just to go WGN Sports Central, and it should be the first thing that pops up.
Search a podcast that way, WGN Sports Central, and you can catch the podcast there. All right, let's talk later in the week. Have a great week, and thanks for your time. Report back to us later on.
All right, thanks, John.
That's Adam Hoge at the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota, which is just south of Minneapolis. It's over by the airport over there. Wait, that wasn't my Minnesota voice. That was my Chicago voice. So Democrats who are boycotting the State of the Union address, Maxine Waters isn't going to be there tonight, no surprise. Frederica Wilson, the Floridian he got into an argument with, she's not going to be there. Who else? Gregory Meeks, Democrat from New York's not going to be there. That's a few of them. And then this isn't the full list, though, is it? There's more than six. You're saying only six Democrats are going to boycott the State of the Union? I think it's more than that, Elif.
That's what I found on a CNN report from
this afternoon.
Yeah.
Well, because I think two from Illinois are not going to be there, and they aren't listed here.
If you keep reading towards the bottom.
Oh, there's Danny Davis and Jan Schakowsky and Bobby Rush. So the Illinois contingent is not showing up. I guess I'm not surprised. Who does Donald Trump hate the most? Hillary and Barack, they're from Illinois. Who does he kick around the most? Chicago. Who does he also hate super duper a lot? Rahm Emanuel. I mean, it just keeps coming back home. So Danny Davis, Jan Schakowsky, and Bobby Rush are not showing up. I don't know. Shouldn't they be there? Shouldn't they be there, kids? We ask you to text to us words that will be on the bingo card for those of you doing the drinking game tonight. What words should be on the Donald Trump bingo card? Text it to 312-981-7200. We'll read some of your suggestions after this on WGN. If you're playing the drinking game at home, what should be on your bingo card? Best, biggest, and believe me. He'll ad lib, and I think the phrase believe me absolutely is going to get mentioned three times. That's my over under. Biggest collusion obstruction from 312. I wouldn't go to the, even though he wants you to believe, and he says it over and over and over again, there was no collusion, there was no obstruction. That will not be in the written speech, and I think it's too far off the path for him to ad-lib that. I'll bet you he doesn't say collusion or obstruction once. Boy, if I were his people, I'd advise him not to. Really great? Yes. FBI? No. Fake news? Very interesting. You know he wants to call out the fake news. Boy. Kevin Violetta, is he going to say the word fake news on that speech tonight?
Oh, yeah.
He has to, because he's going to say something and then say, well, they won't report that. That's fake news.
Yeah, even if it's not on the script, when he does his little ad-lib thing, he'll just drop that in. Yeah. I'd bet on that,
that
for sure.
That is so unpresidential.
I mean,
I know that, but give me... Stormy Daniels, no. Steve Wynn, no. Now you're just being funny. Clinton, no. Obama, no.
I think he might say better than ever before when describing.
Well, he'll reference, right. So he'll reference certainly Barack, you know, the previous administration or the other guy or what's his face. Will he say Rocket Man?
Well, he's going to bash someone. It just it depends on how very clear he's going to be on who he is bashing. Like maybe he will just say Hillary.
If he wants to say, you know, if he's going to say, we're not going to allow North Korea, blah, 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 that's got to be part of his speech. Will he say Rocket Man per se? Yes or no? I say
no.
No,
no, that's too far.
I'll go yes.
Might as well. One of us will be right.
How are we holding back here and saying, you know what, that might be too much? Are you kidding me?
I know,
just
I know.
Look at every single week of his presidency. He one-ups himself every time.
I will. I know. Shame on us if we're surprised by him, right? Okay, I will post on this on Facebook, and we'll let you post there as well. I'm King John on Facebook. We'll get ready for Ro and Anna. They're coming into the studio next on WGN. Just beat 3 o'clock. Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis in the Allstate Showcase studio. Can I just bounce some names off of you or words for my...
Sure. Bingo.
Bingo card tonight. Mm-hmm. Rocket Man. Yes or no? Is it on
no.
there?
I go no.
No, no,
He's
no.
He's going to talk about North Korea. And you can just see him. You know how I'm just getting there. But
no,
North Korea, I don't think so. Wall.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Wall. There's an over under of 5,000 numbers of times he says the word wall.
Well, somebody said I, me, or my 100. But we, how many times does he say the word
fewer than
we?
10?
Less than 10? All right, hold on. I'll make that notation. Clinton or Obama? He'll reference them, but does he mention them by name?
I think he will mention...
By name,
Obama. Yeah.
Both.
Really?
Can't help himself.
Collusion, obstruction?
No.
Nope.
FBI?
Yes.
Yes.
Let me give you one last one.
Yes.
Does the word Mueller appear in his speech tonight?
No. Yeah. And I would bet Russia doesn't. Do you think Russia does?
There's guidance that says that Russia will not mention Russia.
Because of the hinkiness going on with no sanctions but naming these billionaires.
Well, in general, do you think he brings up the investigation just to sort of clear his self? So he won't say obstruction, he won't say
collusion. No, I think he stays away from the whole
thing. He's not even going to talk about that.
I'm going to go with staying away from the whole thing.
Fake news? Does that appear?
Fake news.
Does he
totally.
Say fake news?
Yes, he will.
Do you think he'll say that? Fake news?
No, I'm hoping. I don't.
I'm
I hope not.
With my heart here. Not. I'm saying no. Don't say fake
don't
news.
Don't lead with your heart. These are cynical times. The thing, but Anna makes a point that's really important. You know, he did not issue the sanctions. Keeps saying he's going to do it. He has not done it now. He's taking his second pass on doing that.
Do you see what the vote totals were on that? I mean, it was less than 10 people in both houses total that voted, what is it?
To do it.
To do it or to not do it. It was overwhelming support for sanctions. Am I reading the same scorecard as you? And yet he's still not going to do it.
Yes.
Okay. What are you kids doing?
Well, we've got the Mr. Skilling. This is Super Blue Blood Blue Moon tonight.
Oh, that's right. Today's Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Hello.
Tonight's the...
One in 100 years.
It's Tuesday.
Today's Tuesday, guys.
It's the Super Blood Blue Moon.
Tomorrow.
Wait, but it is tomorrow, right?
Well, it's overnight. Yeah, he's going to explain it.
And will we be able to see it is the other issue.
So it's late tonight, early tomorrow morning.
It's the Super Blue Blood Snow Moon, which I believe was a character in Game of Thrones. Then you've got Susan Sunshine is going to be here. Do you see this, where the private sector might rethink healthcare and sell it to America? This is pretty interesting.
What a disruption that would be.
Yep.
And, why not?
A.B. Stoddard and Congressman Kinzinger get us ready for the big speech tonight.
I'm out of the way. Have another really good show.
Thank you.